tonight I thought we'd, lacking anything really that I was going over or trying to pick something new, I thought maybe the book of Malachi. So let's go over the book of Malachi. Start in Malachi chapter 1. Someone mentioned the other day that I was always talking about love, always talking about God's love. And so tonight, after a brief little tiny bit at the beginning of Malachi, that will not be the case. So, I was actually kind of happy about that. I feel like love's been well represented of late. So I get a chance to talk about something else. That'll be fun. So, let's read Malachi chapter 1 and verse 1. I'm going to be reading out of my Rotherham's Bible, except for around chapter 1, verse 9, in which case the New American Standard definitely translates it better than the Rotherham's, so we'll go through that particular part in the New American Standard Bible. Okay, Malachi chapter 1, starting verse 1. The oracle of the word of Yahweh unto Israel by the hand of Malachi. I have loved you, saith Yahweh, and yet you say, wherein hast thou loved us? Is not Esau brother to Jacob, inquireth Yahweh? Yet I loved Jacob, and Esau have I hated. And I have made his mountains a desolation, and his inheritance a dwelling for the jackals of the wilderness. Whereas Edom may say, we are laid waste, but we will again build the desolate places. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, they may build, but I will pull down. And men shall call them the boundary of lawlessness, and the people with whom Yahweh hath indignation unto time's age abiding. And your own eyes shall see, and ye yourselves shall say, Yahweh be magnified beyond the boundary of Israel. So in this first little section of Malachi, the message that God is giving to Israel is, I have loved you. So this is where the love comes in. And of course, the response of Israel is, how? How have you loved us? So, what God brings out is, you know, I loved Jacob, and I hated Esau. And I've made his mountains a desolation. At this time that the book of Malachi was written, the nation of Israel had gone into captivity. And in fact, all nations around that area had gone into captivity. Because the Chaldeans and Nebuchadnezzar came through, and they rooted everybody up and destroyed everything. And so God took the nation of Israel away captive, off of their soil. And they were not a nation, and they were not a people. And they took them captive into Babylon. But see, God loved Jacob, and he brought him back. And he again planted them in Israel, and he again caused them to be a nation, and he again had a temple built for them, and they were again a people. Whereas Edom, they are nobody to this day. So we can see that God did love Israel. And whereas Edom, oh, in case you didn't know, Esau is Edom. So when he says, Esau I hated, he's referring to Jacob and Esau. The nation that came forth from Esau was Edom. The nation that came forth from Jacob was the Israelites. So it says, you know, whereas Edom may say, we're going to build it again. They're not going to build it again. They're done. So God did indeed love Israel. He forgave him. He brought him back. And he reestablished him and set him up. Okay, so let's continue on in the book of Malachi. Malachi chapter 1 and verse 6. He says, a son will honor his father, and a servant his lord. If then a father I am, where is mine honor? And if a lord I am, where is my reverence? Says Yahweh of hosts. To you, ye priests, who despise my name, yet you say, wherein have we despised your name? In bringing upon mine altar polluted food. And yet you say, wherein have we polluted thee? Because you say, the table of the Lord is a thing to be despised. And when you bring near the blind as a sacrifice, and say, no harm, or when you bring near the lame or the sick, and say, no harm, offer it, I pray unto you, unto your governor. Will he accept you, or will he lift up your countenance? Says Yahweh of hosts. Now therefore pacify, I pray you, the face of God, that he may grant us favor. At your hands hath this come to pass. Will he lift up the countenance of any of you, saith Yahweh of hosts? Who is there even among you that will shut the doors, so as to not set a light to mine altar for nothing? I can take no pleasure in you, saith Yahweh of hosts, and your presence can I not accept at your hand. For from the rising of the sun, even unto the going in thereof, great is my name among the nations. And in every place incense is offered to my name, and a pure present. For great is my name among the nations, saith Yahweh of hosts. But ye are profaning me, in that you say, as for the table of the Lord, polluted it is. And as for his produce, contemptible is his food. And ye have said, lo, what a weariness! And ye have snuffed at me, saith Yahweh of hosts, and have brought in the torn, and the lame, and the sick. And ye have brought in, thus ye have brought in a present. Could I accept it at your hand, saith Yahweh? But accursed is he that defraudeth, who when there is in his flock a male, yet voweth and sacrificeth a corrupt thing to the Lord. For a great king am I, saith Yahweh of hosts, and my name is revered among the nations. All right. So God's getting on Israel a little bit. And what he had to say to them is relevant to us today, though our cultures are different. He says, a son honors his father and a servant his Lord. He asks, if I'm your father and if I'm your Lord, where is mine honor? Well, of course we honor God, he'd say. You know, surely God's not talking to us. To you, O priests. Wait a minute. What? We haven't despised your name, have we? Right? We haven't despised God's name, right? How have we despised your name? He says, because you've offered on mine altar a polluted offering. What? How have we offered a polluted offering to you? Because you say, as for the table of Yahweh, a thing to be despised it is. Let me translate to modern English. Oh my goodness, I've got to go to church again. The table of God, a thing to be despised it is. He says later on, he says, and ye have said, lo, what a weariness. Guess we better go to church. I know I should. What a weariness. And ye have snuffed at me, saith Yahweh. Seriously. So in the Old Testament, if they brought before God a sacrifice like they were supposed to offer to him, you know, the lambs and the goats and stuff. You know, if they brought him one that was blind and sick and lame, was that a good sacrifice? No. That's not a good sacrifice to God. Go offer it to the governor. Go give that blind, sick, lame thing to the governor. Is he going to be happy with you? No. No. See how God ties those two things together? Is God happy with us when our attitude is, oh, what a weariness. Oh my goodness, we got to go to church again. And we view his table as contemptible. We snuff at it. I promised I'd read verses 9 through following out of the New American Standard because it brings that out better. You know, he says, but now you will entreat God's favor that he may be gracious to us. With such an offering on your part, will he receive any of you kindly, says the Lord of hosts? Or that there were one among you who would shut the gates, that you might not uselessly kindle fire on mine altar. For I am not pleased with you, says the Lord of hosts, nor will I accept an offering from you. If we view what God set up for us to participate in as a weariness and as a burdensome thing, and is a contemptible thing, an annoying thing to have to participate in, is he going to be pleased with us? And then we're going to pray to him and say, oh dear Heavenly Father, and call him our Father. Oh Lord, kind and gracious Lord in heaven, call him our Lord. Is he going to be pleased with us? And we're going to ask him to treat us with favor, you know, and be good to us, and watch over our lives, and help us, and have this food nourish us, and all this other stuff that we're constantly praying for, wanting God to treat us well. When we view with contempt things he set up for us to do, not good, is it? Not good that we would have such an attitude. It's interesting to me that the Micah says, you know, this, he's saying this to ye priests. He was saying it to the priests back then, but it's relevant to us today as priests. Every single one of us is a priest. You know, we are priests of God by being Christians. So we should take this to heart. Okay, moving on. Let's read in chapter 2 and verse 1. Now therefore, for you is this charge, O ye priests. If ye will not hear, And if ye will not lay it to heart, to give glory to my name, saith Yahweh of hosts, then I will send among you the curse, and I will curse your blessings. And indeed I have cursed them, because you are not at all laying it to heart. Behold me, threatening on your account the seed, and I will scatter refuse upon your faces, the refuse of your festivals, and you shall be carried away into it. So shall you know that I sent unto you with this charge, as being my covenant with Levi, saith Yahweh of hosts. My covenant was with him of life and peace. So I gave them to him as one to be revered, and he did revere me. And before my name dismayed was he. The instruction of truth was in his mouth, and perverseness was not found in his lips. In peace and in uprightness walked he with me, and multitudes did he turn from iniquity. For the lips of a priest should keep knowledge, and instruction should men seek at his mouth, for the messenger of Yahweh of hosts he is. But ye have departed out of the way. Ye have caused multitudes to stumble at the instruction. You have violated the covenant of Levi, saith Yahweh of hosts. Therefore I also will suffer you to be despised and of no account unto all the people, in proportion as none of you have been keeping my ways, but have had respect to persons in giving your instruction. Okay. Here's another charge that God gives, directed at the priests. He tells them if they will not hear and take it to heart to give glory to his name, he's going to send among them a curse and curse their blessings. And he gets some pretty graphic language here. I read in my, he says, behold me threatening on your account the seed, as it translates it in here, that's the offspring. It's threatening on their account the offspring. Whatever that means. He says, I will scatter refuse upon your faces. I read in my margin, that's literally dung, that's poop. The refuse of your festivals. You know, you go have a nice feast or whatever. We have a great time of fellowship, like potluck, and then what happens about 4, 5, 6 hours later? That all comes out. God's going to smear that on your face? Whoa! That's like intense language, isn't it? Better lay it to heart, whatever he's saying here, I suppose. He says, you will know that I sent you this charge. And this charge is his covenant with Levi. He says, my covenant was with him of life and peace. And God gave life and peace to Levi as one to be revered. So God's part of the covenant was he gave Levi life and peace. Levi's part of the covenant was he revered God. And he did revere me, he says. And before my name dismayed was he, and the instruction of truth was in his mouth, and perverseness was not found in his lips. In peace and in uprightness walked he with me, and multitudes turned he away from wickedness. So at the beginning of the priesthood, when God gave that covenant to Levi, that's kind of how it was. They revered his name. And they had the instruction of truth on their lips. Because they walked with God, he says, in peace and in uprightness. So that instruction of truth had something to do with peace and uprightness. And it wasn't like he could just have instruction on his lips. He walked with God in peace and in uprightness. If you're not walking with God in peace and uprightness, you're not going to have the instruction of truth on your lips. He says, multitudes he turned from iniquity. There's some of those stories in the Old Testament about how they turned back the people at times. He says, the lips of a priest should keep knowledge, and instruction should men seek at his mouth, for the messenger of Yahweh of hosts he is. Then he gets on him. He says, you have departed out of the way. People aren't walking before God in peace and in uprightness. He says, you have caused multitudes to stumble at the instruction. You have violated the covenant of Levi. You've not revered God. We do not ever want to be in the situation where God is at us like that, where he would want to smear poo on our faces, because that's how contemptible we are to him, because we do not revere his name. and we do not walk before Him in peace and uprightness. He says, He will also suffer them to be despised and of no account, in proportion as they have not been keeping His ways. And here's a specific thing that's been being done. He says, you have had respect to persons in giving your instruction. In the New American Standard, that translates that partiality. The idea there is that here's a member of the church who is very prominent maybe in the community. We wouldn't want to offend that person now, would we? You see? So you have respect of a person there. And so maybe you don't say things because you don't want to offend them. So you're not completely forthcoming about the instruction. And you cause multitudes to stumble. That would be horrible. We'd never want to do that. We never want to have respect of persons. We want to walk before God in peace and in uprightness. People should be able to seek instruction at our lips. And we should be able to give it to them because of how we walk with God. Okay. Moving on. Chapter 2 and verse 10. He continues. Let me get a drink of water. He continues. Is there not one Father to us all? Did not one God create us? Wherefore should we deal treacherously one with another, profaning the covenant of our fathers? Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination has been wrought in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has profaned the holy place of Yahweh, which he had loved, and hath taken to himself the daughter of a foreign god. May Yahweh cut off from the man that doeth it, him that crieth out, and him that answereth in the tents of Jacob, him also that brings near a present to Yahweh of hosts. And this a second time will you do, covering with tears the altar of Yahweh, weeping and making outcry, because he will not again turn to the gift and receive it with acceptance at your hands. And yet you say, for what cause? Because Yahweh has been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, with whom thou hast dealt treacherously, though she was thy consort and thy covenant wife. Now was it not one who made you, who had the residue of the Spirit? What then of that one? He was seeking a godly seed. Therefore should ye take heed to your spirit, and with the wife of thy youth do not thou deal treacherously, for he hateth divorce, saith Yahweh, God of Israel. Him also who covereth with violence his own clothing, saith Yahweh of hosts. Therefore should you take heed to your spirit, and not deal treacherously. Okay. So now God's getting on people. He says, don't we all have one Father? Didn't one God create us? Why would we deal treacherously one with another? What? We don't deal treacherously one with another. Here's what's happened. Judah has profaned the holy place of God, which he loved, and took to himself the daughter of a foreign god. And now, here they are, covering the altar with tears, wondering why God's not accepting them, wondering why God's not listening to them. And why? Why is it? Because he's witness between them and the wife and their wife. See, oftentimes it can be easy as a man, instead of being faithful to your wife, you know, if you let your eye wander after some other, say, girl who's maybe not so modest and chaste, if that makes sense. She's got a different god. She's got a foreign god. She's not the type of girl that's a good girl in church. That's why she's immodest and unchaste and dressed like a hoe. Right? She's got a different god. She's the daughter of a foreign god. Would you be treacherous against your wife and be wandering off after that? If you really want to get right down to it, the end of the line is that he hates divorce. Right? What's the purpose? What's the purpose? He's seeking a godly seed, he says. He's seeking a good family and good kids and a solid unit. He says he hates divorce and also someone who covers with violence his own clothing. How do you treat your wife that you have authority over? You yell at her? You rule over her? God is witness between us and with our wives, whether or not we have dealt faithfully with them or not. Do we want God to hear our prayers, to be with us? Then we should deal faithfully with our wives. Okay, let's read verse 17 here. 17, I believe just 17. It says, chapter 2, verse 17, he says, "You have wearied Yahweh with your words, and yet you say, 'Wherein have we been wearisome?' When you have said, 'Everyone who does wrong is right in the eyes of Yahweh, and in them he has taken delight,' or 'Where is the God of justice?'" This would be the type of thing where you've seen people do it probably sometimes. "Oh, he's okay. You know, he's doing all that wrong, but he's got a good heart." Right? Yeah. "Everyone who does wrong, God delights in." Yeah. Sure. Or here's another one. "Life's not fair." That's life. Well, that's life. It's just all messed up. "Where is the God of justice?" It's just messed up. That's just the way it is. It's not messed up. It's not messed up. People get what they sow. They reap what they sow. Usually there's a little bit of deception going on inside about what has actually been sown. And that's why bad things are happening to good people, or whatever that's trying to be said by talking like that. We never want to talk like that and weary God with our words, like life's not right, or somehow it's messed up, or somehow he's going to accept someone who's not really good because, well, they do have a good heart at the end. No. Either Jesus would say, "Make the tree good and its fruit good," or "Make the tree bad and its fruit bad." Done. You're either good or you're bad. Let's not be messing around. Okay, let's continue on. Chapter 3, verse 1. He says, "Behold me, sending my messenger, who will prepare a way before me, and suddenly shall come to his temple, the Lord whom ye are seeking, even the messenger of the covenant in whom ye are delighting. Lo, he cometh, saith Yahweh of hosts, but who may endure the day of his coming? And who is he that can stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's alkali. Therefore will he sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver, and will purify the sons of Levi, and will smelt them as gold and silver. So shall they belong to Yahweh, offering a gift in righteousness. Then shall the gift of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant to Yahweh, as in the days of age past times, as in the ancient years. Therefore will I draw near unto you for judgment, and I will become a swift witness against the mutterers of incantations, and against the adulterers, and against them that swear to falsehood, and against them who rob the hire of the hireling, the widow, and the fatherless, and drive away the sojourner, and do not revere me, saith Yahweh of hosts." This is a great prophecy of Jesus. We all know that. He says he's going to send a messenger to prepare his way before him. We know that was Elijah the prophet. "And suddenly shall come to his temple the Lord whom you are seeking." Here's Jesus. He's going to appear. And who can stand before him? He says he's like a fuller's soap or a refiner's fire. And he's going to sit and purify the sons of Levi. That's kind of how Jesus was. He, by what he said and what he did, kind of divided people into two groups, whether they were dross or slack or crud, or they were the pure silver. And that's the purpose of him. That was his purpose. So that Levi would again offer to God righteous sacrifices. He says, God says he's going to come near for judgment and become a swift witness. And here's a list of some bad people. Mutterers of incantations. So obviously we wouldn't be like trying to mutter incantations and do witchcraft and stuff, right? That's bad. Right? And against adulterers, that's bad, right? Them that swear to a falsehood. So, people that affirm something that's not true, wouldn't want to be telling lies and whatnot. That's bad, right? And then who rob the hire of the hireling, the widow, and the fatherless. So that's people who take advantage of people who aren't in a really good position to, you know, defend themselves. God's not real happy with that. Here's a great one for us in our day. And drive away the sojourner. That'd be people who want to export all the Mexicans. Kick them out. Get rid of them. Drive away the sojourner. Instead of being gracious. And do not revere me, saith Yahweh. You know, in the Old Testament, He says, he nails on this one a few times. He says, sojourners became ye in the land of Egypt. How'd you like how they treated you in Egypt? How'd you like it if you were trying to come up here to work and send money home to your family and everybody wanted to kick you out? Because they're a big, lazy, fat American who doesn't work very hard and you're taking away their job, making them look bad. I mean, that's pretty rough, but... Be gracious. God is gracious. God is gracious to the fatherless, to the widow, to the hireling, to the slave, to the sojourner. And if we revere God, we will be gracious to them too. He says, he goes on in verse 6, he says, because I, Yahweh, have not changed, therefore ye sons of Jacob have not been utterly consumed. For from the days of your fathers have ye departed from my statutes and have not observed them. Return ye unto me, that I may return unto you, saith Yahweh of hosts. And then we go into the classic scripture on tithing. We'll read it real quick. He says, you say, wherein shall we return? How are we going to return to God? Here's a good practical way to return to God. How shall we return? Will a son of the earth defraud God? Nevertheless, ye have been defrauding me. And yet you say, wherein have we defrauded you? In the tithe and the offering. With a curse have ye been cursing. And yet me have ye been defrauding, the whole nation. Bring ye in all the tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Yea, I pray you, put me to the proof hereby, saith Yahweh of hosts, whether I will not open to you the sluices of the heavens and pour out for you a blessing till there be no room. Then I will rebuke for you the devourer, that he spoil not for you the fruit of the ground. Neither shall the vine in the field be barren to you, saith Yahweh of hosts. So shall all the nations pronounce you happy, for ye shall become a land of delight, saith Yahweh of hosts. Classic tithing parable here. How do you return to God? Well, here's a great way to return to God. Bring in the whole tithe to God. Don't defraud him. Don't rob him. He gave you everything you have. He's given you all your stuff. He knows that you went out and spent all that money on something you wanted. It was interesting. Back when I was younger, I used to ride motorcycles. And on the way home from Spanish Peaks one time, we stopped at this motorcycle track and went to ride it. And it was just a free to the public, show up and drive on the track, right? And there's this sign there. And the guy wanted $10. And he said on the sign, don't show up here in your $30,000 lifted diesel and your $6,000 trailer with your $10,000 souped up motorcycle and short me my $10. That was on the sign. I kind of feel like God's trying to say the same thing. Don't drive up to church in your Escalade with your rims and your fancy clothes and your iPhones and your 4K televisions and all your other stuff and short me my tithe. Or whatever it is. You know? Why are you defrauding me? Return to me. And I will return to you. And he says, he gives us a promise. He says we can test him if we return to him. He'll open up the heavens and pour out a blessing. And he says, he'll rebuke for us the devourer. And so I want to quickly go over the devourer. Have you noticed that sometimes stuff just goes in such a way that everything costs you just a little bit more? That is a classic situation of the devourer. This broke, that broke, all of a sudden you needed this for your car, all of a sudden you thought this was going to cost this much, it cost that much more, and it just seems like all your money's all the time gone. That is a devourer. You're dealing with the devourer. You probably wouldn't deal with it unless you were a Christian. But now that you're a Christian, and if you're short in God, you start to find that you're always short. It's like what you sow, you reap type of a thing. So the solution to that is to test God out here. Return to Him. Faithfully bring Him His tithe. And see whether or not your life goes better. That's when all of a sudden you like put on a pair of pants and find a 20 in the pocket. You know what I mean? You go to the store and it's on sale. You know what I mean? It's nothing big, but it's all these little ways in which stuff comes together, as opposed to all these little ways in which stuff is just... Whoosh. Test him. See if it works, he says. He says in verse 13, moving on, he says, stout against me have been your words, saith Yahweh. And yet you say, what have we spoken one to another against thee? What have we spoken against God? Ye have said, vain it is to serve God. And what profit when we have kept his charge, or when we have walked gloomily before Yahweh of hosts? Well, now therefore we're pronouncing happy the proud, and the doers of lawlessness have been built up, and they who have put God to the proof have even been delivered. What's he talking about here? It says, stout against him have been our words. What do you mean our words have been stout against God? What? Well, you've said vain it is to serve God. What do you mean? What profit is it when we've kept his charge and when we've walked gloomily before him? Like, it's one of these things like, oh, here we got to come to church again. It's just like, ugh. Think about that. If you say, oh, it's a pain in the butt, I have to go to church again. So what you're really saying is the person who's actually happy is the guy who's too proud to go to church. The guy who doesn't have to. He's the guy that's awesome, right? The doer of lawlessness has been built up because he doesn't have to go do this tedious thing which you have to do, right? See what you're doing to God by having that type of an attitude? Walking gloomily before God, doing the thing that you have to do. Why are you doing it so gloomily? Well, you'd be happy if you didn't have to do it. Oh, so all these proud evildoers are happy? They're the blessed ones? Shouldn't have that attitude ever, should we? Think about what we're saying to God. Think about, when we die and we're standing before Him and like all these excuses or things that we have in our minds like don't make sense when He's staring at you. You know what I mean? We don't want to be in that situation. So, verse 16, he goes on and he says, then they who revered Yahweh conversed one with another. And Yahweh listened and heard, and there was written a book of remembrance before him for them who revered Yahweh and for such as thought of his name. Therefore shall they be mine, saith Yahweh of hosts, in the day for which I am preparing treasure, and I will deal tenderly with them, just as a man dealeth tenderly with his own son who is serving him. And ye shall return and see the difference between the righteous and the lawless, between him that serves God and him that serves him not. For lo, the day cometh that burneth as a furnace, and all the proud and everyone who works lawlessness shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall consume them utterly, saith Yahweh of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. So shall the Son of Righteousness arise to you who revere my name with healing in his wings. And you shall come forth and leap for joy like calves let loose from a stall. And you shall tread down the lawless, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day when I am working with effect, saith Yahweh of hosts. Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb, for all Israel, statutes and regulations. Lo, I am sending unto you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and awful day of Yahweh. And he shall bring back the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the land with utter destruction. He says, you know those who revered Yahweh? They talked with one another. They agreed to serve Yahweh, probably. Says God listened to him, wrote a book of remembrance before him, and they will be remembered in that day when he comes. Because there is a day coming that burns as a furnace. And it's like Jesus was a refiner. And that fire comes, and either you're, you know, because you got the rock, you know, just the icky rock, and that fire comes, and that rock either turns to ashes or pure silver. So when Jesus returns, and the Son of Righteousness arises, there will be those humans who turn to ashes, and there will be those humans who spring forth into something precious. One of the two. That day comes. He says, all the proud and everyone who works lawlessness will be stubble. That day will consume them completely. But he says, the Son of Righteousness will arise to those who revere his name with healing in his wings. When that furnace of a day comes, when the earth is destroyed and everything is done, we're either going to turn into something precious or we're going to get burned away. So, I guess the encouragement is, let's revere God and walk in His ways.